prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. This is a show that was supposed to take place, but I got sick, as you recall, a little bit over a week ago. And I'm very excited to have my guest that I'm going to announce in just a second on the show. And I'm actually happy that I'm doing this interview after all of the various bloggers and pundits have had a chance to review the research, because I think that I've got a lot of different questions to ask Dr. Satish Rao in just a moment. Of course, we have to, of course, acknowledge the title sponsor of this podcast that makes it possible, and that is All American Pharmaceutical and EFX Sports. Right now, you can get six of their top-selling products: Carbolin, Crealkalin, protein powders, pre-workouts, all sorts of great stuff, absolutely free. If you go to superhumanradio.net, click one of the EFX Sports banner ads, put in your address and your name, and you will pay $5 and change for shipping, but that is actually the shipping cost for USPS to ship your package. And you can try them before you buy them, because Dr. Jeff Galini believes that no one should buy anything before they try it, and he puts his money where his mouth is. So check that out. Show him some love. My guest today is Dr. Satish Rao. How you doing, Dr. Rao?
I'm doing very well, Carl. Thank you.
And I thank you for being here. I really feel that we're going to discover that this particular study is going to contribute to how we move forward with how we look at probiotics. I've been saying for several years now on this show to all the people who say food is medicine that it's true. And just the way you can overdose on food, I mean, on medicine, you can overdose on certain nutritional therapeutic approaches as well. And we have to take this more seriously than a lot of the willy-nilly approach that we look at nutrition today. So to talk about what research preceded this, I know that you've published other studies on gut funguses and their relationship to diseases. What research preceded this that left unanswered questions that you had to perform this particular study?
Well, thank you, Carl. So, you know, we have been looking very systematically over many years why people get gas and bloating and distension and belly pain and sometimes altered bowel habits associated with this, such as constipation or even diarrhea. And in the process, we were one of the early people to identify the presence of excessive bacteria in the small bowel that we call SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. We also discovered that there are many folks who can't digest certain common food items, such as dairy products, we call lactose intolerance, or more importantly, fructose, which is the fruit sugar
right,
that causes gas and bloating. So, you know, we've been looking at these patients over many years, identifying these problems and helping them get better through a variety of, once we've identified the problem, appropriately we've been treating it. But so that has been the preamble to this particular work. So what happened about 5 years ago was, for the very first time, I started seeing, in fact, the first two patients that I saw completely intrigued me. Because in addition to the usual symptoms of gas and bloating and distension, they reported brain fogginess. Now, that is a rare symptom to present to a gastroenterologist with. Because, you know, if you're having brain fogginess, you probably will see a neurologist or somebody, or a psychologist or a psychiatrist or somebody who does more brain-related work, but not a gastroenterologist. So I was very intrigued by this one patient who came to me from Atlanta and another patient who came to me from New York. And they both, in addition to having gas bloating, they were really complaining of brain fogginess. So that, I think, was the unusual symptom that kind of set the ball rolling for this particular study.
This is just an aside, but did they report a diurnal effect of the brain fogginess, foggy in the morning, but as the day wore on, they became less foggy?
No, not necessarily. Okay. Quite often, most of these patients, I mean, not just these two, but the rest of them too, the brain fogginess was usually after meals and was often associated with their gas and bloating. And just a few really had some level of persistent fogginess, if you like, throughout the day where there were some fluctuating levels. But these were not people, I mean, this brain fogginess was more transient.
Yes, it was acute, and it was postprandial, so that you actually can go, oh, it's coming from the food. Now, why is the next question, right?
That is correct. And so, you know, their brain fogginess would last for anything from 30 minutes to up to 4 to 5 hours in these people. It very varied in intensity, severity, and the type of manifestation.
Okay, so talk about this particular study that made the rounds, it became viral on the internet that you just performed. How was this study designed?
So just going back to what I said earlier on, so we were quite intrigued by this unusual symptom. So we set about to try and identify an underlying metabolic dysfunction to explain this brain fogginess. Now, just for a moment, if I may digress.
Please.
We, as gastroenterologists, do see patients with cloudiness of mind, and, you know, people are in what we call as encephalopathy because they have liver failure, because we see a lot of patients who have severe liver failure from, you know, various diseases, alcoholic liver disease and cirrhosis and so on. So we are familiar with that group because, you know, those are the group that are mildly even comatose. Likewise, we see patients with kidney failure.
Right.
Who have high levels of urea and their brain is not functioning and they are a little comatose and foggy. But these folks that we were seeing had completely normal liver function and completely normal kidney function, and yet they were foggy. So we were really intrigued as to why they were. And so we thought there must be some metabolic connection. So we set about in a systematic manner to identify some toxic product that may be produced by the gut. Now, in patients' liver failure, the ammonia is the big mischief maker.
Right.
So the ammonia is coming from the gut, as you know.
Right.
And the liver normally has enormous capacity to try and break down the ammonia and make and detoxify it in the liver. But unfortunately, if the liver is not working, then the ammonia is not detoxified. It accumulates in the body, and then, you know, it leads to encephalopathy. So the same way, we thought there must be something that's happening in the gut that is causing this. So we set about to measure ammonia. We looked at glucose levels. We looked at other levels, including lactic acid. And lo and behold, we found that these folks were producing high levels of D-lactic acid.
Now, what is the D-isomer? How is that different than just regular lactic acid? Does that tie back to a specific origination?
Yes, very good question, actually. So there are two kinds of lactic acid in the body. The main lactic acid we produce is the L-lactic acid. So we all do that every day. Every time we walk briskly or we do any exercise, you know, we get cramps in our legs, in our muscles, or especially those who vigorously exercise. That cramp in the muscle is because of lactic acid buildup, and that is the L-lactic acid, which is the major form of lactic acid we all produce. In addition to this, we produce a very small amount of D-lactic acid, predominantly in the gut. Predominantly in the small bowel and the colon, very small amount. And that is then absorbed and quickly excreted by the kidneys and a little bit by the liver. But if you produce large amounts of D-lactic acid, then we have limited capacity to detoxify it and clear it in the body. As long as that D-lactic acid persists in the body, then the brain becomes foggy and the mind becomes cloudy.
And I would have to imagine that there are some peripheral symptoms that some of these people may have mentioned, like tingling or even the onset of hyperalgesia or what appears to be neuralgia, right?
Some of them did have neuralgia, but fatigue was the predominant symptom.
Yeah.
in them. You know, they usually felt very lethargic and they didn't feel like doing anything. And I think that was by far the more predominant symptom.
Okay, so once you discovered the D-lactic acid production that was high and you suspected it was in the gut, how did you proceed to identify the SIBO condition?
So we were, remember, as I said in the beginning, these folks were coming to us with gas and bloating and abdominal pain or discomfort and brain fogginess. So we were trying to put this connection together. So the way we set about investigating for the D-lactic acidosis and gas and bloating was to look for the presence of SIBO. So we gave them a glucose or a fructose breath test. And this is a standard test we do in our lab to identify SIBO. Normally what happens is we measure their breath sample for hydrogen and methane, then we give them a drink of glucose, and then we measure breath samples sequentially at 15-minute intervals for the next 2 hours. In a normal individual, the entire glucose is absorbed and nothing happens. But in a patient in whom the small bowel is colonized with bacteria, because normally small bowel is sterile, there is virtually no bacteria. But if it's colonized by bacteria, then the bacteria will ferment the glucose and produce hydrogen and methane, which is then absorbed from the gut into the lungs, and then we expire this hydrogen and methane.
Wow.
By collecting breath samples, we can see, does this person have colonization or fermentation or no? So we were looking for that in this individual. So we gave them all a glucose breath test challenge. And in addition, we also collected blood and urine samples for L-lactic acid and D-lactic acid, along with measuring, you know, ammonia, glucose, insulin, and other things as well. And what we found was that in 2/3 of these patients, they did become brain foggy in the course of our study.
Mm-hmm.
Their symptoms were reproduced. And in about 80% or so of this group, we found the high levels of urine D-lactic acid, and some had high blood L-lactic acid as well. So that is how we made this whole connection, that this group with this brain fogginess and gas and bloating indeed had both SIBO and were producing high levels of D-lactic acid.
Why are we seeing this rise in SIBO in general? As you point out, the small bowel should not have any microbes living in it. We're seeing a lot of people with SIBO today. It's distended stomachs. It's causing gas. In fact, in anticipation of our show a couple weeks ago, I looked at the Google Trends for some keywords: probiotics, SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, gassy, and bloating. They all have the exact same trajectory starting in January of 2004. Now, I'm not saying that one is causal. I'm saying that there's a correlation, that people were searching for the word bloating or probiotics, or SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth from 2004 forward to the same volume, and they grew all the way to today. And so what I'm trying to figure out is if, in fact, and this is a question we can address later, but, you know, we're everybody is banging down probiotics today, but even at that rate, they shouldn't survive into the small intestine. Why are they surviving? What's going on with the small intestine that's making it fertile, so to speak, for seeding?
Very good question. And so that was one of the factors that we investigated, as you said, earlier on in the early 2000s. And we were clearly, like you've noticed, we have also seen a higher level of gas and bloating. And I think there are a few reasons for that. One, focusing on the SIBO issue. Now, the gut, the small bowel is the most active part of the entire gut. It is very, very active. Secondly, it secretes the largest amount of fluid in the body, several liters a day. And thirdly, it is bathed by acid that is produced by the stomach. And lastly, it is the largest immune organ in the whole body. I mean, there is tremendous amount of immune protective ability in the small bowel. So all of these help to protect the small bowel from any infection and contamination. Whereas you just contrast that with the colon. Colon is a slow organ. There is less immunity, etc. And that is where we have a lot of bacteria, where there is a healthy symbiotic relationship between the colon and the bacteria. So small bowel is protected against any infection and so on. But if some of these inbuilt protective mechanisms are either tinkered with or have become problematic, then I think we have set a stage for colonization. Let me give you a few examples. One is if you have slowed gut motility, and the easiest way to do that is by put medications such as opioids. Opioids slow motility. We know that opioids cause constipation, et cetera. It also slows small bowel motility. So you have now created an artificial situation where you have slowed down gut motility and making it more likely for the bugs to colonize, the bacteria to colonize the small bowel. Okay, that's one situation. Another situation is the use of certain drugs such as PPIs, the proton pump inhibitors. Now, we use them for good reasons. I prescribe a lot of PPIs for reflux disease, etc. But there is also overuse of these drugs, and many times the people are not being taken off, and there is some abuse also of these drugs. So PPIs are good for reflux disease, but by decreasing the acid production, acid is an important defense mechanism for the gut. You've suddenly now opened up the small bowel for potential contamination. Now, we've shown this in a study that we published, that of the many risk factors we looked at, the two important risk factors for SIBO development was use PPIs and underlying dysmotility. So when the muscles were not working properly in small bowel, these two were important risk factors for SIBO. So you can see all of these things have been happening. Now, PPIs, we only started using in the mid-90s and so on. Opioids, as you know, I mean, everybody talks about it now, including our politicians and so on. Has a lot of people have started using opioids.
Well, and so, but there's other, but I think there's other issues at so you've written about fungi in the stomach, and fungi are actually a higher level of being, if you will, than microbes, because they have they have a nucleus. I can't think of the name of the term, the difference. That fungi are, but some of these fungi have been shown to, in order to protect the environment, they have a direct effect on the vagus nerve and suppressing the acid production in the stomach. One that comes to mind that gets a bad rap, but there's actually, we need H. pylori in our gut, but if it becomes too predominant, then we can have problems. So, because there's some evidence that H. pylori protects against asthma in children, ironically. But some of these other things out there may also be causing the pH of the gut to change and make it more favorable for the seeding of the small intestine, right?
Correct. Very true. I mean, so if you alter the small intestinal fluid and pH and so on, then I think you are favoring or you're creating an environment for colonization. Either you alter motility or the contents repeatedly over time, yes, you are going to favor colonization with bacteria and or fungus.
What I want to do right now is take a quick commercial break. I've got lots more questions. We're talking with Dr. Satish Rao. This is an interesting discussion, I promise you. And it's going to probably make some people rethink their supplementation, I predict. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. If I can find the switch to hit the music. There it is.
You've got your devices and apps that track your activity, workouts, sleep, and diet. You have your medical records and blood work. All this data and none of it is integrated, so you can see a true snapshot of just what progress you're making and where. Now you can securely centralize all this data and become the CEO of your health. Heads Up Health gives you powerful dashboards, charts, and tools to connect all your data into meaningful information. One seamless platform. Go to headsuphealth.com today. Use code SHR and get 20% off your subscription. That's headsuphealth.com and use code SHR.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high protein potato chips with 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
For the past 4 months, I've been keeping a secret. Every night at bedtime, I tape my mouth shut with Somnifix strips. That's right, and here's why. Whether you snore or not, at some point in the night, almost all of us start breathing through our mouth. Since I've started using Somnifix strips, I've noticed that I sleep deeper and have seen improvements in my health, fitness, and cognitive function. That's because nose breathing activates the parasympathetic nervous system and improves nitric oxide production. And that leads to improved sleep, immunity, carbon dioxide, oxygen exchange, and much more. Oh, and if you do snore, it'll help you stop snoring. Try Somnifix risk-free. Go to somnifix.com/SHR. Get a free trial pack of Somnifix strips today. What if a sports nutrition company actually let you try all of their best products for free before you ever bought one? You'd be dreaming, right? Well, you're not dreaming. Head over to EFXSports.com and grab their new sample kit that includes not one, not two, but 6 of their top sellers. That's right, 6 different samples of their top sellers sent out to you immediately to try. Just cover a small shipping and handling fee, and they're on their way to you. See for yourself why EFX Sports has taken the industry by storm and why so many athletes worldwide depend on their products, dominate their competition safely and legally. Head over to EFXSports.com right now and click the EFX sample kit in the online store and get your free kit today. Once again, that's EFXSports.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Some of you have heard me talk about simplecontacts.com. You know, I went to school for optometry, and I understand what it takes to fill a contact lens prescription. This company is the coolest company I've found so far. If you're looking to save time, and we're all busy, you know what it's like when you have to go get a new prescription for your contact lenses. It's a PIA. Simple Contacts allows you to do it right on your iPhone or your computer. So it's fast and it's simple. Now, this isn't going to replace a full eye exam. But if you just need to renew your contact lens prescription, Simple Contacts is the way to go. If you go to simplecontacts.com/SHR and use the code SHR, you'll save $20 off your first order. And get this. I looked at the prices at the vision store that I go to for replacement contact lenses. I got the same contact lenses from Simple Contacts at almost $10 a box less. So not only is it convenient and fast and inexpensive, but their eye exam is only $20 and you can do it on your iPhone. You could do it in the airport. If you're traveling and you're thinking, oh man, I'll just have them ship it to my hotel. And you get your own customer service person. A girl named Addie texted me the moment that I logged on to get my prescription and walked me through the whole process. Right to the end to make sure that I got my contact lenses. And my contact lenses arrived super fast in just a couple days. They were here. Check them out. Go to simplecontacts.com/SHR. Use the code SHR and save $20 off your first order. We're talking with Dr. Sadash Rao about a very intriguing study that he published looking at the relationship of SIBO, metabolic acidosis, brain fog, and more. And we're going to talk about more right now. So you mentioned something a second ago, Dr. Rao, that the small bowel is the most immune of, and we know that the immune system resides in the gut. The gut has been attributed to the onset of many autoimmune disorders because of these types of phenomena. Have you seen any linkage or correlation to people who are suffering from SIBO and also have been diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder of some type?
Yes, in context of two or three conditions that have much more gut involvement. For example, scleroderma. So scleroderma is, you know, one of those conditions which is an autoimmune disorder where the muscle is being replaced by fibrous or scar tissue. More than muscle, it's elastic tissue in the body. Wherever there is elastic tissue, whether it's in the skin or in the muscle where there's elastic tissue, that is all being replaced by fibrous or scar tissue. In that condition, we've seen a significant amount of SIBO and its correlation. We've also seen it in some patients with mixed connective tissue disorders where this seems to be wrong. Those are the couple of conditions where we've seen that connection.
Okay, now let's talk about this new phenomenon that really started around 2004. So I have promoted probiotics on my show. In fact, I probably suffer from SIBO. In fact, I have selfish reasons for interviewing you.
Okay.
I have what I think is lactic acidosis. I'm not diabetic. I exercise a lot, but my muscles burn. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I can feel like if I tense up my legs, I can feel some of the signs of lactic acid production in my muscles. And so for years, I supplemented with VSL number 3, which is a very, very powerful over-the-counter probiotic, and it is the over-the-counter version is 450 billion CFUs per pouch. The prescription version is 900 CFUs per pouch. It's FDA approved for IBS and a couple other gut issues. But I thought, well, like most Americans, Dr. Rao, more is better. I was taking two packets of that and making sure I got plenty of prebiotic fiber for a couple years. Now we're finding out that that's not a good idea. In fact, there was a study that was just, I'm trying to get the author on now, that looked at VSL number 3 specifically and fat accumulation in teenagers. And there's some interesting things going on there. So most of these probiotics we take, they are of the lactic acid producing spores, Lactobacillus acidophilus, bifidobacteria, Saccharomyces boulardii, and others. These are all lactic acid producing microbes, and people are pounding them down like they are the fountain of youth. Is this where the SIBO is coming from?
I think it is making an important contribution to the increased prevalence of SIBO. That I truly believe, especially based on the findings that we have now come up with the study, where, as you said, you know, one of the intriguing things for us was why did these patients develop this D-lactic acidosis and SIBO? And as I said, we've been seeing SIBO for many years, but why this? And so when we tried to look more carefully, we found that almost all of this group of patients, they were all taking probiotics. And they've been taking it for anything from 3 months to several years. And just like yourself, some were taking VSL3, some were taking other kinds of probiotics, mostly over-the-counter, and less than 20% or so of these probiotics were indeed recommended to them by physicians. Most of them just read around or internet,
right,
or whatever, or colleagues, friends,
right,
relatives, told them that it's healthy. You know, you've got a GI problem, you know, take probiotics. So they picked up probiotics, and some were taking 2-3 varieties of probiotics, and so on and so forth. So that was the common denominator for this patient, for this group of patients who developed this brain fogginess, C1D lactic acidosis. And in some of them, not in all of them, we were able to culture the lactobacillus and other probiotic organisms from the gut when we aspirated them. Given that we could not, we did not grow in everybody, largely because of the limitations of our technology. With our current technology, we can only sample the proximal 2 to 3 feet of the small bowel, and we have to use much more sophisticated instruments to get really further down into the small bowel, which, as you know, is 19 feet long, to get really culture and lavage all the fluid from there. So in that limited sample, clearly there was evidence that both they were taking probiotics and we were culturing these bacteria from the proximal gut, giving us the connection that maybe these probiotics was indeed playing a key role in the development of their symptoms of gas, bloating, as well as brain fogging.
And I want to say something, because it was early on when probiotics first came out, most gastroenterologists said it's not going to do anything because the acid in the stomach is going to destroy it. It's never going to get to the large intestine where it needs to go. And in fact, right now, there are companies working on frozen microbes that they've experimented with. I read a study on a new supplement design where they're actually freezing the microbes, and they actually can prove that it's getting into the large intestine. But most of these people have problems with their stomachs already. The acid levels of their stomachs are low. So the vestibule of opportunity for these microbes to be destroyed before they seed the small intestine has been removed. So you have a perfect storm. You have slow gut motility, as you point out, which also could be from hypothyroidism and a variety of other things. And then you have mega doses of probiotics and specific strains, just these strains, being pounded into the gut. We've never seen this in evolution. From an evolutionary perspective, we've never been able to take 450 billion CFUs of these 8 strains of probiotics. So I have to believe that the condition of opportunity plus all of these probiotic people are Activia, kimchi, they're taking probiotics. They're actually causing this problem. I have to believe that. I'm not a doctor. I don't have any credentials, but I can connect the dots. I really can.
You're right. That's what we saw in our study, that, you know, these folks were taking it for health benefit use inadvertently. And I think it led to clear problems for them, and they had to come searching for this. They've been plagued with this problem for very many years until they made their way to our institution, and we were already investigating this problem. And that was, in fact, the main message that we wanted to get across, is that there are millions out there with this problem and are both not being diagnosed and are probably suffering from this problem.
So there are two ways that the body buffers metabolic acidosis, especially lactic acidosis. Obviously, one is intracellular sodium bicarbonate, or bicarbonate in general, and the other one is vitamin B1. And we know that B1 and all the B vitamins depend on a stable, intact digestive system and things like intrinsic factor in order to be absorbed in the first place. So can we say that that the production of lactic acid is overwhelming, but also the body's way of coping with acidosis is also compromised in this situation?
It's a little hard for us to make that leap of faith argument based on our study, but because we were mostly focusing in the gut. And gut is, as I said, is the primary source for D-lactic acid production. L-lactic acid, of course, can come from the muscle like you described, and from many other sources in the body. But D is very much a gut-based lactic acid. And it is microbial-based also, so it really depends on microbial breakdown. So in this situation, what I don't know, and maybe we need to do more research here, is whether continuous recurrent production of D-lactic acid does impair bodily functions, does impair gut function, does impair kidney function, and so on. We don't know that. I think that may be, I mean, clearly it is a toxic product. That's why we produce very small amounts, and we have a very efficient mechanism of clearing it. But if you produce large amounts, cramping is a pain. It's a painful sensation. So body has defense mechanism, it is telling us that there is something there that shouldn't be there and that is harming. So just like we experience the cramps, and it's a way to stop us from doing over-exertional physical activity, and that's when it's trying, body is trying to protect us. It is giving us a warning symptom. Likewise, I think the, you know, when you produce excess D-lactic acid, there will be some warning symptoms that we are either ignoring or we are unaware of.
Oh, and especially the brain fog. I know that for me, before I started to make the connection, which was actually about a month and a half ago, I had to change my diet. And we're going to come back and talk about this after the break. But I had to cut a lot of the starchy acellular carbohydrates out of my diet. And as soon as I did that for a couple days, I didn't wake up with brain fog in the morning. So I want to talk about what do people do if they fear that they have this situation. Obviously, the best thing to do is to go to a physician and be tested first, but not all physicians are going to be up on this and test for it. So let's talk about, when we come back, diet. Let's talk about antibiotics and things that people can do, okay?
Yes, please.
Okay, so stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We shall return.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Hi, I'm Ashley Grace, co-founder of H-Hemp Company. Hemp CBD improved my life so much that I started H-Hemp Company to help others naturally feel better. You don't have to have had a severe brain injury like me to benefit from H-Hemp Company products. If you're struggling to feel better, calm your brain, or better deal with daily stress and want to do so naturally, please try H-Hemp Company products. Search H-Hemp Company and use code SHR for 20% off and free shipping. That's H-Hemp Company and code SHR.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Who ever heard of a supplement company that lets you pick the products they make and sell? What you have now, we are All American Body, a factory direct supplement brand proudly brought to you by All American Pharmaceutical. Don't pay more somewhere else. You can get the same or even better products directly from us. Now check this out. All American Body is a brand about you. Tell us what to make next so you can save big. Go ahead and request a specific ingredient. You know, arginine, citrulline, vitamin D, a product type or category, keto, greens, naturals, herbals, nootropics, and even a specific branded product or formula. We'll either copy it exactly or make it even better. And best of all, it won't cost anything close to what you've been paying, period. And if we do end up using your suggestion, you'll get the first bottle absolutely free. We'll also give you full credit on that product's description page. You'll be famous, signing autographs and people asking you to take pictures with them wherever you go. So head on over to allamericanbody.com right now. That's allamericanbody.com and make your product request today. All American Body, crazy savings, insane results.
If you suffer from abdominal bloating, relief is here. Introducing
Atrantil.
Developed by a board-certified gastroenterologist, it relieves bloating where it starts, in the small bowel. That's why
Atrantil
works while other remedies don't. In clinical trials, 88% of bloating sufferers who use prescription medications with no relief found
Atrantil
relieve their symptoms, and it's available without a prescription because
Atrantil
is made from a patented molecular combination of botanical extracts. It's not a probiotic. Plus, it's natural, vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO.
A-T-R-A-N-T-I-L, Atrantil.
Atrantil. Even the name is proven to make you feel better.
Go to lovemytummy.com and use code SHR for 10% off. That's code SHR at lovemytummy.com. Lovemytummy.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back. Listen hard. This is good information. Share it with your friends. Dr. Rao, I have to plug one of our sponsors, Dr. Kenneth Brown, and that's how I actually learned about you, because he was on my show not too long ago and he mentioned this particular study.
He makes
a product that actually stops some of the gas from being produced by the unwanted microbes that inhabit the small intestine. And that's Atrantil. So what can a person do? Well, how do you treat someone that you're positive that they have the presence of D-lactic acid in high amounts? They have the presence of these microbes in the small intestine. Can you take antibiotics and kind of do a scorched earth and kill everything in the small intestine?
Yes, in fact, that's what we did in our group of patients. You know, we identified in our 30 patients in the brain foggy group, and there were 8 in the control group. And in the brain foggy group, we identified the presence of SIBO in almost 80% of them. 70% of them. And then once we identified them either with the breath test or with aspirations or both, we then, based on aspirate, we know predominantly what kind of bacteria they have, and we were able to tailor their antibiotics to the bacteria that we cultured and based on their allergy profile, etc. In others in whom we were unable to grow the bacteria, but they had a breath test positive, likely because the bacteria were further downstream to the area we could sample, we gave them what we thought was a broad-spectrum antibiotic that would cover for aerobic and anaerobic strains of bacteria. But we gave them long courses, like up to 4 weeks of treatment, 2 weeks of one antibiotic and maybe a couple of weeks of another antibiotic, to try and improve their symptoms. And with that, you know, in about over 80% of patients, we prospectively carefully followed these people, and they had significant relief. Certainly, their brain fogginess disappeared, and they felt better. But that was not it. In addition, we had all of them withdraw their probiotics. That was important.
Yes, of course, because otherwise you're killing microbes and basically creating new soil to plant new ones in.
Correct. You're reinfecting them potentially. So they all were asked to withdraw probiotics altogether, and they were given antibiotics. In the small group of patients in whom we did not find evidence for infection, but had D-lactic acidosis, we had them just withdraw probiotics. And again, that was a part of the group that actually felt better. So overall, with a combination of withdrawal of probiotics and antibiotics, I think we got most of them to improve significantly, both from their gas bloating symptoms and also from their brain fogginess symptoms.
Does any of the acidity of the stomach get into the small intestine, or is it just at that vestibule threshold where it kind of is the gatekeeper from anything getting into the small intestine?
Oh, no. A significant amount of acid actually gets into the small bowel.
So wouldn't a protocol of taking perhaps hydrochloric acid in between meals to lower the pH of the gut and have an abundant, assuming someone doesn't have GERD, because obviously you don't want it coming up in the esophagus, but if someone doesn't have GERD, wouldn't taking hydrochloric acid capsules in between meals help to kill the microbes that have populated the small intestine?
I think if there is evidence of significant SIBO and if we are not able to treat them effectively with antibiotics and probably promotility agents, then maybe we could go with hydrochloric acid. But I think we have other ways by which we can keep it down. And really, the most effective way is to take antibiotics and or antifungals, depending on what we're growing. and to keep and really to address the underlying problem, which I think would be key, either probiotic usage, if there is dysmotility or slow motility, to try and speed up motility if we can. If they are taking PPIs, then to try and remove PPIs from their regime or step down PPIs, give them, you know, H2 blockers or antacids to see if that can help their symptoms. And if they're on other medications that are slowing gut motility, like opioids or anticholinergic drugs and so on, then to try and find substitutes for them. One example would be antidepressants. You know, there are antidepressants which are good and help a number of GI problems, particularly IBS and hypersensitivity, but some have anticholinergic effects. In other words, they slow gut motility.
Right.
And they are not good if you have a SIBO, bacterial overgrowth situation, or constipation. So you may look at other antidepressants, particularly in the SSRI class, that do not have this anticholinergic effect, and they may give the benefit of antidepressants in improving the GI symptoms and not cause the adverse harm.
Do you ever look at a patient from an endocrinological slant and look at the thyroid? Because the hypothyroidism has been shown to dramatically slow gut motility, just the way that hyperthyroidism speeds it up so fast that most people end up with loose stool. Do you ever look at these people and go, let's look at your thyroid and see why you are having these gut motility problems?
Absolutely. In fact, I do it in almost all my patients.
That's excellent. So I'm so glad
I do. I look at thyroid function. I also look at, you know, other important elements such as zinc and magnesium, and we look at vitamin D. These are all very important things that I do in most of my patients, because, and B12 and folate, they become deficient, and they all have effects on gut motility. So they are very important. But just on the thyroid story, if I may, for a moment, the commonest GI dysmotility disorder from an endocrine standpoint is actually diabetes. Diabetes is the number one GI dysmotility disorder. Even although many books, and even today we educate our medical students and say, you know, when you have somebody with constipation, think about thyroid, which I think is correct still and true. But the bigger cause of constipation is diabetes, and that is to be you know, made note of, because diabetes affects the nerves and it affects the entire gut nerves. It not just causes gastroparesis, but also actually causes constipation and small bowel dysmotility. And it is one of the important predisposing factors for SIBO also is diabetes.
That's amazing. Yeah, and you know what? I've actually said this on the show for the past couple of years, that there are a lot of things that happen to a diabetic that are the problem is the gut, but it's blamed on insulin and glucose. And the reality is that most diabetics have really messed up stomachs. They do, because of the diet. Which brings me to the next question. Am I accurate, or is it just me, that some of these acellular carbohydrates and starchy carbs, and especially sugar, lots of sugar, feed the lactic acid bacteria, and that they then produce more lactic acid?
Oh, yes, absolutely. No, you're not kidding at all. Yeah, that's very true. So all the lactobacillus particularly depends on carbohydrates and sugars for both its survival and fermentation. And I think one of the main reasons of its energy utilization is carbohydrates, and it uses this for both its consumption, metabolic fuel, and for generating lactic acid and other acids, yes.
You know, lactic acidosis, and especially high levels of it, actually can lead to neuropathic pain. And the interesting thing about fibromyalgia is that most women who suffer from fibromyalgia, they crave sugar. They eat candy and sweets constantly. We've learned that the microbes that inhabit our gut are very smart. They're tied closely to the brain. And what I mean by that is that they produce chemicals that makes the brain crave the things that they want. They know how to order the food that they want through our brain. And so there is an interesting relationship between the chemicals that these microbes produce and the further feeding of them, that ends up hurting us in the long run. It's amazing to me. It's really, they're so smart. These, I almost think sometimes these microbes needed legs to be ambulatory and hands to be able to get things and teeth to break it up and make it ready. They actually run us.
They do. I mean, you know, we have what, over 500 billion bacteria sitting in our colon, and we don't fully understand what they're doing. Most of them are clearly helpful and beneficial, and they probably help us and protect us in a number of ways, and we're just beginning to understand that, including several neurological disorders and so on. So but you know, they have a place, and but bacteria in the wrong place likewise will cause harm, and that is what we found out in the study, is really bacteria that have now in the small bowel, which there shouldn't be, is not healthy. And if we inadvertently add to that by taking bacteria, then I think we are causing more mischief than there needs to be.
So what would you like both clinicians and lay people, and especially clinicians, I guess clinicians need to start testing for D-lactic acid if their patients complain of brain fog, huh?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I think this brain fogginess, it may be a sign of gut disease, especially if the brain fogginess is associated with gas and bloating and should not be ignored. I urge all my clinician colleagues to really pay attention. It is not difficult to do this test, and I think they should really consider, you know, just collecting urine and sending it off to the labs and getting measured. They are, you know, many labs, particularly Mayo Clinic Lab and other labs, do this measurement. And L-lactic acid is easy. They can do it in any lab. Any small hospital in the world does L-lactic acid. So you can measure L and D-lactic acid very easily. And that would be a foreteller of, you know, that they probably are dealing with a potentially problematic situation that they should treat.
Is D-lactic acid testing in serum useful when diagnosing this, or it has to be urine?
No, the problem I understand from my biochemistry professors and colleagues is that it is not very stable in blood. And you have to, of course, collect it in ice and transport it in ice. And then the lab should be ready and prepared to analyze it quickly. So because of all of those reasons, generally they don't recommend D-lactic acid in blood. I mean, people are doing, of course, research studies. It can be done. But for clinical measurements, they usually recommend urine D-lactic acid collection. So what we did in our study was all of these patients, we collected baseline urine sample, and then we gave them the sugar solution. And then at 1 hour, 2 hours, and 3 hours after ingestion of the sugar solution, we collected both blood L-lactic acid and urine D-lactic acid, along with the breath samples that we were collecting and so on. So it's a simple way that over a three-hour period, we collected a lot of information on these people. We collected blood, we collected urine and breath samples, and we were able to diagnose whether they had SIBO from the breath test or they had D-lactic acidosis or L-lactic acidosis or both from the blood and urine test.
Okay, we only have 4 minutes left. Two fast questions. So it sounds like along with the antibiotic protocol, a low-carbohydrate diet that is low in starches and sugars, but we can still eat greens, or is fiber also something we need to be careful of? Because we know that lots of fibers actually aid in feeding these bacteria.
Sure, but you know, I think there are various kinds of fiber, and sometimes the psyllium kind of fiber tends to aid them more as opposed to the fruit-based fiber.
Interesting.
So I think I'm not totally opposed to giving people fiber, but lowering the highly refined carbohydrates is very, very important. So I think the more complex carbohydrates, the small bowel bacteria may not handle it that well. I think they certainly handle much more in the colon. But the highly refined carbohydrate is a definitely no-no, and that will really create a lot of gas and bloating and mischief.
We actually did a show on the study that showed that what is called acellular carbohydrates, which is highly refined carbohydrates that you're talking about, things that are made into a flour, they actually increase the populations of the wrong types of bacteria in the stomach. That was like 3 or 4 years ago we talked about that. So this fits nicely into that discussion. Dr. Rao, it was hard to get you on the show because I got sick. I thank you for being patient. This has been a great interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Carl. I really appreciate being on your show.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
We're going to take one quick commercial break, and we will be right back with more.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, Labs.com.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Yeah, I'm telling you, and look, it's not like I'm saying I told you so, because I was one of the idiots that was pounding down 900 billion CFUs a day for a couple years. And I've talked openly about my gut issues and the onset of some autoimmunity issues. And I did this to myself. I did. This idea, you know, we keep saying food is medicine. Oh, well, we love to tell it, well, you know, food is medicine. The way I eat, it's healthy for me. It's food is medicine, and food is medicine. But then we go, oh, this is the new trend. Let me pound this down without even understanding what the repercussions are, what it, like knowing anything. Everybody jumped on the probiotic bandwagon. I mean, out the wazoo. And now 76% of people in the United States have gut issues. I mean, come on. Maybe the probiotics aren't causing SIBO, but they're clearly a component. We are losing the acidity in our guts from something. I don't know what. I mean, I have some theories, and I don't want to put my tin hat on right now. But we're losing the acidity. The gatekeeper is gone. The gatekeeper that keeps things from being able to grow inside our small intestines are gone. And then on top of that, we're like, we act like we're seeding a football field with grass seed. We're just pounding down this stuff day in and day out. We're eating kimchi. We're eating kefir. We're drinking kefir. We're eating yogurt. And we're wondering why we have gut issues. From an evolutionary perspective, we've never, ever, 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 never, until like since 2004, had this phenomenon. And people's guts aren't getting better. Look at the trend. I put it up on the Facebook page for Superhuman Radio. I'll put it up again today. Look at the trend. The trend is that people are having more problems with their gut today than back in 2004. The trajectory is exactly the same for SIBO, probiotics, and bloating. So, yes, there's a correlation. That's what I'm saying. One is causing the other. I don't know, but there's a correlation. And clearly what we're doing isn't working. I mean, it's very easy to see when something isn't working. You have to stop doing it. All right, look, that's it for today. We have great shows planned the rest of the week. Hope you can tune in live if you can. This is a great podcast. Please pass this podcast around. Okay, see you tomorrow.